Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams. Leonard.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Sten.
Here.
Potter.
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony at City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity he or she is authorized to represent. Please read the 2 p.m. time certain.
Agenda item 317, create a local improvement district to construct street and bridge improvements from the Columbia Slough to Alderwood Road in the Northeast 92nd Drive Local Improvement District.
Andrew.
Good afternoon, Mayor Potter and council members. Andrew Abbey, Local Improvement District Administrator. Just want to back up a little bit and just kind of remind council of where we've been. We brought a resolution forward to council on January 31st that initiated local improvement district formation proceedings. That resolution was approved by council on January 31st and directed me to schedule an LID formation hearing, which we then came back on February 28th and presented that formation ordinance to you and to the property owners who were in attendance. Normally what would have happened on February 28th is that we would have passed, council would have passed the ordinance to a second reading the following week on March 7th. At the request of several council members, we took a hiatus to allow for some time to talk to the property owners. And a two-week hiatus was requested by Mr. Phillips, the council, to International Paper. We wound up granting a four-week hiatus, so we're here 2 weeks later than what we originally anticipated on March 28th instead of March 14th. I was directed by council to hold a meeting with the folks who had remonstrated against formation of the LID and who had signed the testimony sheet to bring along my transportation planner who did the analysis, which was the basis for the trip volume apportionment methodology, and also just to hear input from the folks who were opposed to the LID to see if there was a compromise proposal that we could bring back to council. In working with International Paper, we scheduled a property owner meeting for March 12th, and I'll walk you through that in a little bit more detail in a moment in terms of what transpired at the meeting. But we held a meeting with the property owners on March 12th, and of course it was a public meeting and anybody was able to attend. And then what you have before you today is an amendment that, should you choose to adopt it, would make a different finding of special benefit and substitute the proposed finding of special benefit as proposed by International Paper for what was originally proposed in the formation ordinance. And council certainly has the prerogative to make an alternative finding of special benefit. So what I'd like to do is just kind of walk through the amendment with you. The amendment does a couple of things. One is that it makes some additional findings into the public record, and then, of course, it does make an alternative finding of special benefit. Should you choose not to adopt a different finding of special benefit, I do have an alternative amendment which does the same thing in terms of incorporating additional findings into the record, but it retains the existing finding of special benefit. But I don't need to present that to you until and unless you decide not to adopt this particular amendment. So essentially what we have before you are two mutually exclusive amendments, and council can adopt one, but they can't adopt the other. But in either case, I recommend that you adopt one of the two amendments before moving this to a second reading to either adopt or not adopt the formation ordinance. So with that in mind, if council doesn't have any questions before I get started, I'd like to just walk you through the amendment that's before you. So as you look through the amendment, what would happen is if you adopt this amendment, we would have obviously a significant change in finding of special benefit. It's not of a minor nature, in my opinion, it's not of a minor nature where we could just simply adopt this change in finding a special benefit today, amend the ordinance, and then pass it today. In my view, and the city attorney can confirm this, what we would need to do is schedule a continuation of this hearing for April 25th, which is 4 weeks out, to provide the code-required 3 weeks notice, or the earliest practicable date thereafter. So what would happen is we'd come back here in 4 weeks and then hold a hearing on the new assessment methodology after notifying all of the property owners in the LID. So the city auditor would send out notices next week notifying everybody of the new proposed estimated assessment amounts. And then what I would do as local improvement district administrator is respond to any or and all remonstrances received per the filing deadline of a week beforehand. So what would happen is the remonstrances would be due on April 18th, and then I would come back to council on April 25th and present to you any remonstrances received. And again, that three-week notification period is required by code. Council does have the prerogative to waive code if it so chooses, but in my respectful recommendation in the interest of communication and transparency would be to honor those code requirements in terms of notifying property owners. And then what would happen is on April 25th, I would bring to council some amendment to the findings, because the findings are predicated on the existing finding of special benefit. So there would just be some additional amendments we would need to do to the formation ordinance. So there's a couple of additional findings that this amendment would do. And at this point, what I would say is that if council adopts this amendment, basically what council is doing is adopting my findings in terms of what transpired since we had the last hearing on February 28th. So you can see that there would be a new finding number 17, which said the council makes a new finding of special benefit per the amounts in Exhibit I, Attachment 4, in the new estimated assessment column in lieu of the previously proposed finding of special benefit per what's shown in Exhibit F. So essentially what you would be doing is you would be substituting the amounts as proposed by Mr. Phillips for the amounts that we notified the property owners of. There is a non-substantive change to Exhibit F, which is the remonstrance evaluation. On the advice of the city attorney's office, we would just simply like to change the heading of lien number to future lien number to make very clear that we have not imposed an assessment that would be something that would happen with a future and subsequent ordinance. And moving forward with the LID program, what I'm planning to do is, instead of making reference to a lien number, make reference to a future lien number to just clarify that no lien has yet been imposed. The other thing that substituting Exhibit F would do is the auditor used a slightly different sequence of lien numbers than what I anticipated. So it just simply put the lien numbers in the proper sequence to agree with what is in Exhibit A. And I would just note for the record that all of the property owners were properly notified of the amount in a timely manner. This just simply introduces the sequence of lien numbers that the auditor used, just so that the cross-reference is consistent between Exhibit A and Exhibit F. Again, there's no substantive change in terms of the assessable square footage or the estimated assessment amounts. So substituting Exhibit F in and of itself does not trigger the need to re-notify property owners, because Exhibit F just simply evaluates what we proposed and what the remonstrances were relative to that proposal. Then what I'd like to do is, if council doesn't have any questions, we'll move you to Exhibit I in the amendment that is before you. So as noted here in Exhibit I, this agenda item was read on March 14th, but there was no testimony on March 14th. This item was immediately continued to today. As I previously noted, we did have a property owner meeting on March 12th. We had 16 people who attended. They're noted on the sign-in sheet, which is attachment 2. And when we held the meeting, what I did is I walked through some different assessment scenarios, and I just want to call your attention to attachment 3. So following the introductions, we talked about budget versus apportionment of benefit. I won't spend a lot of time talking about this, but really the main point that I made in discussing this with the property owners, there's basically two exercises here. One is the size of the pie in terms of the budget of the project. The other is how you slice the pie. So what I explained to the property owners is, regardless of how we eventually slice the pie, if this project moves forward, what I want to do is to try to minimize the size of the pie and hopefully build this project at the lowest possible cost, regardless of how council chooses to apportion the assessments. If you move on to item three on that agenda, memorandum to council and potential LID amendments, what I explained to the property owners was that I would present a memorandum to council that would recap the meeting. That's essentially what I'm doing for you today, and that we would present this proposal on March 28th, and then council would make a decision whether or not to amend the ordinance and move forward. The piece that is especially important is item four on that agenda, which talks about assessment methodology alternatives. But before I get into that, I just want to briefly recap for council what the default assessment methodology is. So when Alan Snook did his trip volume analysis, and again, the default assessment methodology as proposed is to assess benefit based on trip volume, what he did is it was basically a four-step process. So the first thing he did was to take an inventory of the existing lots within the boundaries of the LID and the area or size of the lot. So the very first step was to look at how large all of the lots were and how many lots were within the boundaries of the LID. Then what he did is he calculated trip generation based on ITE, Institute of Transportation Engineers criteria to determine total trip volume. And that was a science, not an art. I mean, there's very applicable criteria that he used to generate the total trip volume. So, for example, that took into account existing uses, what is there today. It did not assume teardowns of existing buildings. It looked at what was actually in place. But it also looked at potential development. So, for example, you've heard testimony about the IKEA store. It did not assume that vacant land would stay vacant forever and therefore would have no trip volume. So it looked at both the existing uses as well as the future potential uses, especially for vacant land. He took into account the area of the land, the existing building square footage, the floor area ratios, and the zoning. And I do want to point out to council that consistently with LIDs, we really treat zoning as the definitive measure in terms of potential benefit in terms of development of property. I mean, we spend a lot of resources and staff time and council time on updating our zoning code, and it's there for a reason to give guidance in terms of how development occurs. So that's really the baseline assumption in terms of what future development looks like. And then what Alan did within that step number two was to look at broad categories of existing uses, such as north of the Columbia Slough, predominantly retail, office, and industrial space, and then south of the Columbia Slough, predominantly industrial usage. And it is important to note that he and I did not look at current ownership as binding us for the future, because ownership do change. What you have there today may not be the future use that you have tomorrow. So that's kind of the point at which we said we're really going to look at these more broader criteria. We're not going to hang our hat on exactly who's there today and exactly what they are doing at this particular point in time. And I would suggest to council that, you know, part of what we're dealing with here is a paradigm shift, that if you have one way in and one way out, you know, you're used to that being your only alternative. You open up a new alternative means of access. It's a bit of a paradigm shift in terms of adjusting your trip habits in the future when that new connection gets opened up. So the third step was then, once we generated, or Alan generated, the total trip volume, he then applied the Metro Travel Demand Model to drive the trip splits. So then what he did is he stepped it down from total trip volume to then what the proportion of trips would be using the new Northeast 92nd Drive connection versus using alternative connections, if any, that are currently available. So, for example, for a particular property, he may have estimated the trip volume at 10,000 daily trips. We didn't assess based on total trip volume. We assessed based on the percentage split. So, for example, if he estimated 25% of those trips using Northeast 92nd Drive, then we applied that 25% trip split factor to get from 10,000 total trips to 2,500 accessible trips. And in the process of doing that, Alan looked at transportation analysis zones, which looked at trip origination and destination on a detailed and granular level. And then the final step was, once I got those trip splits and what the expected trip volume was to use Northeast 92nd, I simply took Alan's accessible trips and then applied that to the cost of the LID to then allocate the cost of the LID based on trip volume. If you adopt the amendment before you today as proposed by Mr. Phillips, where you essentially start departing from this is at step one, because remember the first step that Alan did was to look at the existing uses and what the size of the area was of the lots. And I'll let Mr. Phillips explain it in more detail, but at that point what you would not be doing is going to step number two of estimating trip volume and going through the remaining steps that Alan Snook went through. You would be then going into Mr. Phillips' modified square footage proposal that he'll explain in more detail in a moment. Just returning to attachment three of Exhibit I, this is where I walk through some other alternatives as I might propose them for council consideration. I talked about trip volume, and as you know, it does assign a higher trip split of approximately 25% of trips south of the Columbia Slough as opposed to an average of about 6% north of the Columbia Slough. Based on the alternative means of access that are already available north of the Columbia Slough. The next thing that I talked about is just a square footage, straight square footage methodology, where you simply would look at the size of the properties north and south of the slough. In essence, what you would do is just assume that the trip split was identical both north and south of the Columbia Slough, despite the difference in terms of the number of connections. So we just simply would look at the size of the properties and do it on that basis. The next alternative that I talked about, we typically do this more in areas like the Pearl District, where you have a very established block pattern, as opposed to the street layout that you have in this particular LID, is we would just do it simply based on abutting linear or front footage. And in this particular case, there's only three property owners who would be assessed out of the 139 or so. So basically what you would do is if you adopted an abutting linear front footage assessment methodology, you would be exempting from assessment the 136 or so properties and putting all of the $2.4 million on three properties, and most of the properties would therefore be exempted from assessment. And those three property owners collectively own four properties, so you would have extremely large assessments on the four properties that abut the area of the new connection on Northeast 92nd Drive.
Is the port one of those four?
Yes. And then finally, I mean, I just threw this out. I haven't ever used this or proposed this as an assessment methodology, but I just provided a hypothetical example that council could make a finding of special benefit based on fire code compliance. And one of the things I explained to the property owners is we currently have two properties south of the Columbia Slough and no properties north of the Columbia Slough that are out of current fire code requirements. Or out of compliance, I should say, with current fire code requirements. And in that particular instance, if council made a finding of special benefit only in terms of the properties that would now be brought into fire code compliance, then only two properties would be assessed, which is International Paper and Toyota. And then we talked about the traffic analysis. Alan was available to answer questions on that. And then at that point, we talked about kind of the mechanics of how council would work. What I wanted to just kind of go back to the cover part of Exhibit I. I just want to talk a little bit about informally how we just kind of measured property owner sentiment. And again, it was those people who were attending, which obviously isn't everybody in the LID. But we did talk about the square footage assessment methodology, and I took a straw poll, and 14 people voted. Some properties had more than one representative in attendance. Nobody present at the meeting voted in favor of just a straight square footage proposal. The next thing we talked about was the abutting linear front footage methodology that I just explained to you, and again, nobody voted for that proposal. And then finally, we talked about that fire code compliance option, and nobody voted for that either. So, I mean, I think one good thing that really came out of that meeting is we ruled some options out. Because one of the things that I appreciate that's difficult for council is when you're juggling multiple alternatives and trying to winnow out things that wouldn't have a strong base of support. So I certainly came away from that meeting feeling like those three options that I laid out for the property owners would not certainly enjoy their support. I do want to note that one of the things that the property owners in attendance mentioned that I didn't have on my agenda was a hypothetical scenario in which all of the benefit was assigned to properties north of the Columbia Slough and none of the benefit was assigned to properties south of the Columbia Slough. and we took a straw poll on that. It's not ultimately in this amendment that's before you in terms of an actionable proposal, but we did take a straw poll on that, and all 14 of the folks who were in attendance did indicate that it would be their preference that all of the benefit be assigned north of the Columbia Slough, and then therefore the port would pay for the entire cost of the LID, with none of that cost being borne by property owners south of the Columbia Slough. Mr. Phillips had talked about, after we took that straw poll, Mr. Phillips talked about a modified square footage proposal, which is, in fact, what's in front of you today, and I'll let him explain it in more detail. But what the amendment does here, if you choose to approve it, and I would ask council to take a roll call vote on this after you've heard the testimony, it would implement Mr. Phillips' proposal, and as I mentioned earlier, we'd be back here in 4 weeks to have further deliberations. If you look at page 2 of Exhibit I, I've summarized for you the financial effects of what this proposal would do. I need to make one correction. I've got a total of 70 properties. That should be 139 properties. That cell didn't add those two numbers. So there were 139 properties that we were discussing. What the existing proposal is, you have a $1.289 million assessment north of the Columbia Slough, or 53.6% that's attributable to the port. You have $1.1 million south of the slough, or 46.4% south of the Columbia Slough, for a total of $2.4 million. So as you read across, you can see that the $2.4 million project cost doesn't change. What happens is the percentage. So the proposal that Mr. Phillips was putting forth would increase the allocation of benefit north of the slough, not to 100%, but to 80.8%. And would decrease the allocation south of the slough to 19.2%. And again, I need to correct that 80.8% to 100% is the underlying total. But the net effect is you have a $655,601.65 change in assessment moving from south to north of the Columbia slough. So it's a 50.9% increase north of the slough, and it's a 58.7% decrease south of the slough, for an overall net effect of zero when you look at the whole LID. And just to kind of wrap up this piece of it, I just kind of want to quickly walk through some of those questions that were asked in the meeting. I didn't try to extensively document everything, but I think these were some of the key takeaway questions that I left the meeting with. First of all, does the assessment methodology take into account current versus potential trip volume of lots not yet developed? For example, for the IKEA store under construction, and Mr. Snook did confirm that this was taken into account when he did his trip analysis. So the trip volume methodology assumed full build-out, not on an undeveloped trip volume of zero. Next, question number 2, won't the East Columbia to Lombard Connector project relieve congestion? Mr. Snook noted that while this project is designed to relieve congestion west of roughly Northeast 92nd, it is not designed to mitigate congestion at Northeast Columbia Boulevard, Northeast Sandy Boulevard, I-205 interchange. So really what we're saying there is that the other project that is under construction will relieve congestion west of I-205, but won't relieve congestion right at the I-205 interchange. Third question, are business employees' trips factored into the trip analysis? Mr. Snook confirmed that the traffic analysis takes into account trips of employees at properties both north and south of the Columbia Slough. So we're not just looking, for example, at freight volume, but we're also looking at trip volume of employees. And then question number 4, does the traffic analysis take into account the higher trip generation of retail uses versus other less transient uses? And Mr. Snook did note that the traffic analysis took into account a higher trip generation rate for retail uses such as the IKEA store. So what you have there is, for something like the IKEA store, you have all of the things being equal, a higher total number of trips. But again, when you apply the trip split south of the Columbia Slough, you have an average of 25% using the new Northeast 92nd Drive connection, while north of the Columbia Slough, you have an average of 6%. So what you're applying is a higher versus a lower proportion to the total trip volume. So that's kind of a rundown of the overall meeting. I've explained, I believe, all the changes that are proposed as part of this amendment. Again, I would encourage council to take the property owner testimony and then take a roll call on this amendment. If council declines to approve this amendment, then I would ask that another roll call amendment be taken on an alternative amendment that would just simply introduce some of these findings without making any change in special benefit. If council were to leave the finding of special benefit unchanged, because there's no requirement triggered to re-notify property owners, council could potentially take a roll call after adopting the amendment to either pass or reject the ordinance today, unless you wanted to continue this by your own prerogative to a later date.
Do you have those alternatives laid out here somewhere?
Pardon?
Are those alternatives laid out here somewhere?
In terms of?
What you just described.
What you're asking us to vote on.
Are they laid out here anywhere, or are you just?
They're not laid out here specifically in the memo. The one thing I did hear on the amendment is to just say that if you adopt this particular amendment, we come back in 4 weeks. I don't have the other piece embedded in this amendment because either you approve the amendment to change a finding of special benefit or you don't, but I can certainly reiterate that if and when you choose not to approve this amendment. And I guess on a final note, I would just like to note that, you know, we do make changes to findings of special benefit. We've had a number of LIDs where we do make adjustments in the assessment methodology. Typically, those tend to be made early on, especially at the resolution phase where we take that initial testimony. And then what we'd like to do is to notify the property owners of what that proposed change is. But we can certainly accommodate it today by coming back in 4 weeks and just notifying everybody of what the proposed changes are. But the good thing is to get this all ironed out before we actually adopt the formation ordinance.
Questions? Thank you. You have a sign-up sheet?
Yes, we have 9 people signed up.
Okay.
Come up 3 at a time. Our first 3 are Todd Thompson, Dean Harris, and Tanya Fondren.
Being here, folks, when you speak, please state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes.
Honorable Mayor and members of council, my name is Todd Thompson. I'm the general manager for International Paper, the Portland operations. We're located at Northeast Columbia Boulevard. Jamie Howe, our Portland controller, spoke to council on January 31st on the LID of 92nd Drive. And Dean Phillips, our local counsel, spoke on February 28th in opposition to the LID of 92nd Drive. Just a brief summary of International Paper. We are a distributor of paper and packaging products, selling to over 1,500 customers in the area. We've been at our current location since 1961. We have 115 people reporting directly to the Portland Division who contribute to the Portland economy. International Paper has been investing in the Portland community for over 40 years. In 2007, we will produce over $100 million in revenues and contribute significant dollars in property and income taxes to the city of Portland and the state of Oregon. Dean Phillips, our local counsel, will be speaking later. We'll cover some of the primary points of our position, and I would like to just cover a few key areas. First, there is no special benefit in terms of freight movement for International Paper with the extension of the 92nd Drive to Alderwood Road. We have no reason to use this route, and we see no need in the foreseeable future. It is important for us to get our trucks on the interstate, as we use the interstates quite often, and winding back to Alderwood and along 105th Avenue is much less advantageous than our current access on Killingsworth. Extending 92nd through to Alderwood will be a detriment to our operational capabilities and truck routes due to the increased trip volume and traffic congestion that will occur on 92nd Drive. Per the traffic study, there will be over 100,000 trips daily. We will not gain a special benefit now or in the foreseeable future remotely close to the assessment, and again feel the current assessment methodology is unfair. While the TRIP methodology meets regional engineering norms, it doesn't account for the uniqueness of this local property because it is bound by the airport, the slough, and most importantly, the river. It also does not match our actual TRIP volume, and as I understand it, the actual TRIP volume of other businesses in the area. The major beneficiaries from this project will be the retail developments north of the slough, who certainly will want the additional access and traffic volume versus the industrial businesses south of the slough who are hindered by the additional traffic. With that said, and as Andrew mentioned earlier, in cooperation, International Paper will partner with other Southside businesses for the common good of our community. We have been involved in a cooperative effort with other businesses in the LID to formulate a modified square footage proposal which achieves a more equitable distribution. And that will be described in more detail by Dean Phillips, our local counsel. Thank you for your time and your consideration.
The honorable members, my name is Dean Harris. I'm the plant manager of Owens Broccoli Glass Container on 9710 Northeast Glass Plant Road. I previously spoke to the council on February 28th in opposition to the LID on 92nd Drive. Let me give you a brief summary of what I said at that meeting. Our factory has been at its current location for 51 years and was one of the first businesses in the area. We employ over 200 people that work four shifts around the clock manufacturing glass containers that are 100% recyclable. Our customer base is large and small bottlers, many of which are located in the Portland metropolitan area and depend on us as their sole supplier. Our position is this: the extension of 92nd Drive to Alderwood will not add special benefit to our business located on 9710 Northeast Glass Plant Road. The increased traffic on 92nd Drive will hinder the limited number of trucks that we do have traveling out of our south back exit. We already have a separate main drive that enters Alderwood Drive to the east. Our opinion is this project should be dropped as the burden on existing businesses is too great. OIC's negative impacts to our business, other Southside businesses will see no or very limited value gained. But with that said, OI will partner with the other Southside businesses for the common good of the community. We have been involved in a cooperative effort with other businesses on the Southside to work on this LID to formulate an alternative proposal. And OI would support the modified square footage proposal as long as it passes under the current offered proposal by the group. Thanks for your time and support of the jobs in our community.
I'm Tanya Fondren. I represent National Storage Centers. We're located at 8436 Northeast Marks Drive. And I would like to say that we did not attend the previous meeting only because we were not notified in a timely manner and to enable us to get here. Our facility is a small 230-unit storage facility. We average occupancy of 97%. And unlike the 82nd Avenue project, which showed us potential benefit, we do not see any benefit in the 92nd Drive project going through. So our first choice would be to see the project not go through at all. Virtually all of our customers are coming from the businesses and residential neighborhoods south of Columbia Boulevard. And since we are tucked away at the west end of Marks Drive, most of our potential customers call us to inquire on availability rather than to drop by. And as far as the TRIP permit assessment that was devised, we have an electronic security gate system that gives us the information of everybody coming and going on our property. We average 134.4 trips per month, including our employees, and not the 273 daily trips that showed up on the assessment somehow. In an effort to compromise, National Storage Centers will partner with the other people on this, on our south side and go by the square footage proposal that we've put together. Thank you.
Thank you, folks.
The next three are John Tesler, Tim Parks, and John Hoagland.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes.
Mayor and Councilman, John Tesler, Controller Ventura Foods. We built and moved into our existing facility there on Marks Drive in 1969, 38 years ago. At that point, we never had a benefit or saw a benefit or a need to have this 92nd go through to Alderwood. In fact, the industrial airport park that we built in is to protect industrial users from the normal residential and commuters out of their area, competing with trucks and so on like that. And this is, I believe, is going to open up a lot of retail traffic going through, speeders, so on like that. So that's one reason why we're against this. The other is that, one, it would add no value to our business other than some employees possibly using it to go to Vancouver. It's not real friendly, driver truck friendly to get out of Alderwood, out of this location, and get up back on the freeway. I think everybody would be using the Columbia Boulevard that they have in the last 38 years. The trip allocation, we believe, is flawed because we were assigned a very high volume of traffic, and we do not have that at our location. Possibly a square footage or some other modification would be better. I think that's about it. Thank you.
Mayor, members of the council, my name is Tim Parks, Paul Janik, counsel for Spector Wilson Properties. I won't go over again. Most of the comments have been made other than to, concur with those comments for my client. Again, this is an industrial client, mostly trucking operations. On the trip count basis, no question the ITE manual says what has been purported to say for this property, but if somebody actually went out and counted cars, I think they'd find that it's nowhere near the reality for this area. In fact, you can go out there and frequently watch, and about every 5 minutes you'll see a truck go by. The comparison is the north side of the slough, and when these massive retail stores go in, there is simply no way that those hundreds of thousands of trips are not going to find their way down this road in very large volume. And the result of that is going to be to cause incredible congestion for the industrial traffic trying to get out. And the result is that we do view this as a negative and not a benefit. In fact, if we had been asked whether we would advocate a project like this at the port's dime or at the city's general budget dime, we would have voted against it. So we would advocate not having the project at all. But again, with the other owners to the south, my client is willing to compromise for the greater good and utilize a methodology that more fairly allocates, utilizing the adjusted square foot proposal. Thank you.
My name is John. excuse my voice. My name is John Hoagland. I'm the president and managing partner of Aerocraft North, located at 9400 Northeast Colfax Street. We're newer to the neighborhood. We've been there about 6 years, just over 6 years, and we've got about 50 employees today. Mayor Potter and council members, thank you for this opportunity to be heard at the ninth hour. Regarding this late response, please understand that all communication intended for our company from the city went to California and was not routed back to the proper parties in Portland in a timely way. In the spirit now of better late than never, I'd like to use my remaining time to say two things. With one possible exception of emergency ingress and egress, which I'll speak to directly in my next point, I see no benefit at all to my company in making Northeast 92nd Street a thoroughfare between Northeast Columbia and Alderwood. The increased traffic will, in fact, damage our company's ability to get our trucks from Colfax out onto southbound 92nd, And for this reason, even if our company was assessed no cost for the LID, we would still be opposed to the project. Secondly, regarding the issue of emergency access, there exist today two gated access points between Alderwood and Northeast 92nd, one through private property via Glass Plant Road, the other at the present northern termination of Northeast 92nd, mere yards from Alderwood. These are both simple chain-link gates secured with hardware store chain and padlocks. Now, Mr. Mayor, I'm a practical man, and I know that in any true emergency, these kind of gates are no more of an impediment to an emergency response crew than a wooden sawhorse. If the emergency was the sort of a thing requiring egress, our maintenance department has bolt cutters, as I assume most of these other commercial properties would, and we could use those to exit through these same gates. My point simply being, and I'll conclude with this, that rather than there being no options for emergency ingress and egress from the south side today, which has been stated many times, there are in fact two that could be used in true emergencies. Thank you for your time.
Next three are Chris Cornoyer, Dean Phillips, and Zini Apostle.
Thanks for being here, folks. State your name when you speak, and you each have 3 minutes.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, Council. My name is Christopher Cornwaye. I'm a operating executive for Tom Saunders, who owns a piece of property on 9331 Colfax. It's a 20,000 square foot warehouse building with very small tenants using it. I would like to go on record in agreeing with the comments that have been made so far. As we in our meetings have become reasonably familiar with this piece of property, I'm not sure whether the council has had an opportunity to actually go out and physically look at the property that we're talking about and the area that we're talking about developing. But 92nd currently has a bridge across it, as I'm sure you've understood from the comments of the previous speaker. The area that is owned by the airport is basically a landlocked piece of ground. There's the river to the north of it. There's the slough that divides it on the south. There is 82nd and the airport to the west, and there's 205 to the east. And that piece of dirt, which has always been pasture land in the past and is now being developed for other purposes, especially retail and commercial purposes, certainly could use some additional access to it in order to make it a viable property. The Southside property owners, on the other hand, are a bunch of industrial, small industrial operations for the most part, some larger, and they have always been sufficiently served by the existing road structures that existed from Columbia Boulevard to those properties. It seems to me that the entire benefit of this actually goes to the Port of Portland's property to the north, where they're seeking to develop it further, and it certainly seems that while they obviously need additional access, especially with parking lots for the IKEA store showing as much as 1,200 parking spaces, none of that benefit really goes to these Southside property owners, who are all small business people that have somehow managed to make the bottom lines make sense in their existing properties with the existing structure that's around them. We now have the city needing needing additional roadways going up to the otherwise inaccessible space. I understand the city's need for that, and all of the Southside property owners also understand that. But the way that the traffic assessment has been set up and the analysis that was initially done on this, it remarkably shows that that though the north side property, the Port of Portland property, contains 75% of the square acreage that's involved here, and the south side property owners have 25% of that same square acreage, somehow the distribution of the cost for improving this section of roadway ends up coming down to a 53% cost for the Port of Portland, the north side properties, and a 47% cost to the south side property holders, only that 25% set of the of acreage owners. We've looked at these numbers. We've looked at the traffic analysis that was done. We have no question that the traffic analysis was done properly, but all of the traffic analysis is done on a speculative basis. We heard Mr. Abey discuss that we heard Mr. Abey discuss that it was really a I'm being distracted by the fact that my time is up. I will quit. But I agree.
You're supposed to work that way.
I agree wholeheartedly with the remarks that are made in the report prepared by International Paper. I think that the city has an easy way out of this situation, which is because of the cooperative Southside property owners. If we can come up with the alternative method, we'll agree to pay our thousands of dollars for this improvement, which none of us find a benefit to, knowing that it's going to be something that probably will be needed in the future. But I think that, in fairness, it should be done in a method much more consistent with what Mr. Phillips has suggested.
Hello. My name is Sini Apostle. I work with GVA Kidder Matthews. I'm a third-party property manager, so I represent absent landlords. What differentiates the properties I represent is that we are multiple tenants, where most of these are owner-operators. Our projects are at 100% occupancy, 93%, and 100% occupancy. They've been that way for years in the existing setup with only the one access. That means that people are shopping the market and finding our properties in the existing location with the existing traffic patterns to be desirable. Therefore, the market is telling us that there's no need for this other access. Additionally, the Realty Associates Fund, who's my primary, I represent two owners here, they are assessed with a $250,000 assessment with the trip count. However, if the square footage analysis is used instead, it's an $80,000. It's a huge variance. One is based on assumptions on regional. The other one is based on actual. It's based on the true square footage and occupancy. My owners have instructed me to say that they do not support the bridge at all. However, they, like everyone else in the South Side, has come together to say that we will cooperate if we use the modified square footage proposal that Dean will be representing. I think the important thing, too, that's not being mentioned is that the Northeast Columbia area is already having a major improvement that's going to be happening in the area, and none of us are having the opportunity to see the benefit of that before we're going and being assessed with additional funds against our businesses to make another improvement. So we're saying, let the first improvement happen. Let us all enjoy it before we move on and spend more dollars in that area for a secondary improvement. And as the port said, when we met with them and tried to come together as a community, the 82nd Avenue is a much better opportunity access point for them than 92nd. So in that supports, again, waiting to see what's happening on Northeast Columbia and how it relieves traffic patterns. So we request that you please, you know, obviously thank you for listening to us, but also please consider our option that Dean is going to represent. So thank you.
Honorable Mayor, Council Members, thank you for the opportunity to come back before you again and for the extension that you granted us last time. We did only ask for a two-week extension, and Mr. Abbey needed a couple of weeks, and that's why we had the extra couple of weeks. And we're here today to talk about the problem that this creates for the southern property owners, but nobody wants to focus just on the problem. We have brought back a solution which can resolve the issues with the southern property owners that is in our coalition. It may not solve the problem for everybody, but it does bring, I think, the greatest good for the greatest number, our solution does. Let me just address a couple of items with respect to the trip volume analysis. What you've heard today, I think, is very accurate in terms of the engineering studies. What the engineering study did is it takes modeling, and as you know, modeling is an assumption. It's based upon a lot of assumptions. What we have heard in talking to all of the property owners out there is that this modeling has no relationship to the reality of what's happening on the south side of the SLU. And so what happens is that modeling, for whatever reason, good or bad, whether you understand the modeling or not, it results in an unfair situation. It's kind of like the tram project. You may not know how it went from 15 to 57 million or whatever it ended up, but you know the end result is not good, and it's not right. And so that's what we are saying today is that we may not fully understand the engineering analysis, but it doesn't reflect reality between the north and the south. It's clear on the map, and I have included it in my letter that has been handed to the council on Exhibit B to the letter. It is clear that the developable properties largely to the north of the blue line on that map and largely owned by the Port of Portland are the undeveloped properties. Those properties are designed to generate trip volumes, but mysteriously, the trip volume results in an adjustment. If you look at the square footage, it results in a lowering of the assessment to the 43.47% adjustment in the assessment versus the property is 70% on the north side and 30%. The developable property is 70% on the north side and 30% on the south side. That is why we think that that is unfair. What's the solution? The solution is the modified square footage proposal that we have proposed and that Mr. Abbey has offered in the amended resolution. It is not a straight square footage proposal, which nobody supported, because it allows for an adjustment to the square footage because of that essentially private access that is available to Acme and Glass Plant Roads. What we bring today as an opportunity to the council is a way out of this dispute. And we don't want to continue the arguments. We want to join with the city and say, let's do the project, but let's do it on a more fair basis. We thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, folks.
Our last person is Lise Glancy.
Good morning, or good afternoon. Lise Glancy representing the Port of Portland. I thought I should testify one more time, just because of a lot of the reference to the retail property that we actually own. The special benefit methodology was developed by the city based on trip volume. The port didn't initiate this LID, but we support the LID. And we support the methodology, the trip volume methodology that the city proposed. We believe it appropriately reflects the shared benefit. The first thing that it provides is a second access for freight, employee, and emergency traffic for those on the south of the slough. And I have a visual that I'll share with you. It also does provide access to Columbia from port properties to the north. That's the port employee lot and some port tenants we have in PAC. And I would note that one comment that was made is that we have a lot of undeveloped property. But again, the trip volume was based on full build-out of that property. So that's really not germane, the fact that it's undeveloped. It's based on trips for full build-out there. It also provides what I'd say is limited access to Cascade Station properties, the retail and office space that will be developed up there. And again, I will show you a visual which shows the route out of that area, which is Cascade Parkway to Mount Hood or to 82nd. That is where the traffic will go. It will not naturally flow down to 92nd Avenue, as has been suggested. So we believe shifting $700,000 or all of the costs to the port does not appropriately reflect the special benefit, and we cannot support it. We believe it's based on an inaccurate perception that the port and port tenants have the ability to pay, and that traffic from retail and office developments in Cascade Station, spelled IKEA to some, will use 92nd. And I would just note that just as businesses to the south of the slough will need to absorb costs, so will the port, by passing through costs to tenants and reducing revenue for other regional transportation projects. We're just not an open checkbook here. Studies indicate that 92nd Avenue will be of limited benefit to businesses within Cascade Station. Again, the majority of traffic will use 82nd and Airport Way. It's suggested that we are landlocked. We're not landlocked. We have Airport Way. We have 82nd. We have a lot of access points, and that distinguishes us from those south of the slough. Also, all Cascade Station PIC was approved by the city without a requirement to make any improvements to 92nd Avenue. It's been suggested that 92nd will become a thoroughfare, and I would just say that after having gone to the site, that's unlikely to occur because of the current configuration of 92nd Drive. It's not really very conducive to traffic turns of any size, you know, whether it's freight or otherwise. And I have just three pictures that I will share with you that shows that, and I thank you for your time.
Can I ask you a question, Lise? A couple things I've read here has indicated that with respect to the square footage assessment methodology, that the port would not testify against that. So what happened?
Say that again.
A couple things that I have, and they're from the other side, but they indicate that they've talked to you about the square footage assessment methodology, and in the communications to two separate ones, they've included a message that the port, just to read it, it says the port has also indicated that it would not provide testimony opposing the proposal.
I said we met with the businesses south of the SLU, and they talked to us about the square footage, modified square footage, and we said at that time that our, just after that time, that we didn't anticipate testifying today, but I just felt that there was so much discussion about retail and that we needed to testify.
I just want to, I want to try to get to the nuance a little bit here. I heard you say that you didn't support the square footage assessment methodology, the modified methodology, but do you oppose it? Is that different from your point of view?
We will evaluate it if that is the methodology proposed.
Okay.
And as has been said, 82nd is a far greater improvement for us, and if we need to put extra money into something, that's probably where extra money ought to go as opposed to 92nd.
I see.
So another $700,000 here makes less sense to us than 82nd.
I see.
Does that
Thanks.
Help?
Thank you. Questions?
So, Andrew, who initiated this LID?
The request came from several businesses south of the Columbia SLU, and especially the request came in when that ammonia truck or whatever it was flipped over on 205 and everything was shut down. I was getting messages from property owners in the area asking what could be done to alleviate that situation. And that's what gave rise to originally petitioning the project 2 years ago, and that wasn't successful. And I think I noted this in a prior council session that the port at that time didn't support the petition. So at that time, all the petition support was south of the SLU. And you know, with this particular petition effort, with the value engineering and the cost reduced, the port was inclined to support it. And that's why, obviously, we're here today.
Okay, and then I heard everybody, not everybody, but the majority expressed support for the modified square footage approach. I'm not sure I heard anybody really clearly define what that means.
Well, what I presented to you, Commissioner Salzman, is I presented you with the numbers, and the numbers that Mr. Phillip provided me are actionable in the sense that they give me something to go notify the property owners with, but, you know, the rationale for how he came up with the specific calculations, if you will, on square footage, I think would be best addressed by Mr. Phillips.
I understand how it changes the cost allocation, but I guess I'm not sure I understand what modified means. I mean, the traditional, yeah.
I'd be happy to answer that.
If that's all right.
I'm forward.
And maybe after Mr. Phillips speaks, there's just a few other items of clarification I'd like to make before council takes a roll call on this amendment.
Thank you, Commissioner, and I understand why there might be some confusion. The reason we're calling it a modified square footage proposal is because of the Acme and Glass Plant properties. We have excluded two of their properties to take account for the private road access that they have by Glass Plant Road, and those are that's a very unique situation that is in this LID area, and they're the only properties that have this private road access, and that's Glass Plant Road. Otherwise, we would have just made a straight square footage proposal. But
the modified is removing two of the properties.
That is correct. That is the only deviation, and that's explained in my letter as well. That's the only deviation that we made to a straight square footage proposal, and we thought that that was fair to give them credit, in essence, for that private roadway access. Thank you.
Andrew Abbey, Local Improvement District Administrator. Just a couple of points of clarification. I do have Alan Snook here with us, so if you have any questions on the trip volume analysis, please feel welcome to call Alan Ford. I did fail to mention in my previous remarks that I do appreciate International Paper being gracious in hosting that March 12th property owner meeting at their facility on Columbia Boulevard, and appreciate that. And Mr. Phillips has also been very gracious in his communication with me and keeping me apprised of what his proposals are. So I think we worked well as a team to bring forward this amendment that's before you today.